Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Ian Sieb, medical marijuana entrepreneur and Jewish community activist. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Just after I graduated from college at UCLA, I lived in Santa Monica, California for about 5 years, and one of my daily running routes took me past an odd little campus not far from the beach. It was usually overcast and often foggy in the morning there, and the unimposing low buildings and grass lawns made very little impression on passers-by. Only a small sign that read Rand Corporation gave any indication that one of the world's great think tanks sat there between the Pacific Ocean and the then ratty urban blight of Lincoln Boulevard. They now have a nicer building, but Rand has continued to keep a low profile, known only for the excellence of its nonpartisan, nonprofit research and its reputation for unbiased, high-level analysis. Rand can't be accused of bigotry or being connected to one or another political party or movement. It is truly objective and highly respected. Well, Rand Corp has just come out with a new study that focuses on something no one spends much time talking about, the economic impact of settling the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. According to a study released this month, Israel's economy would gain $120 billion and the Palestinian economy some $50 billion over the next decade in a two-state solution. That's $120 billion for Israel and $50 billion for the Palestinians. A peace agreement could also see Palestinian income rising by 36%, Israeli income by 5%, according to the Rand study, which also said that the Israeli economy could lose some $250 billion in economic opportunities in the event of a return to violence. Rand said it interviewed 200 officials in the Middle East and elsewhere during more than 2 years of research into the costs of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The study also found that a unilateral withdrawal by Israel from the West Bank would impose large economic costs on Israelis, unless the international community shoulders a substantial portion of the cost of relocating settlers. Intangible factors such as Israeli and Palestinian security and sovereignty aspirations are critical considerations in understanding and resolving the impasse, no surprise, and taking advantage of the economic opportunities of a two-state solution would require substantial investment from the public and private sectors of the international community, as well as from Israel and the Palestinians. A two-state solution produces by far the best economic outcomes for both Israelis and Palestinians, Charles Reese, a co-leader of the study and a Rand vice president, said. Rand used its costs of conflict calculator to figure the economic costs and benefits to Israel and the Palestinians. The study also considered the effects of coordinated unilateral withdrawal from the West Bank by Israel, uncoordinated withdrawal where Palestinians don't cooperate and Israel makes unilateral moves, and nonviolent resistance by Palestinians. Each has a different cost. The implications of a unilateral withdrawal by Israel of West Bank settlers would depend on the amount of coordination. If Israel was able to coordinate with both the Palestinians and the international community, the overall impact on the Israeli economy might be negligible, and that on the Palestinian economy would be a gain of perhaps $8 billion over 10 years. Without coordination, Israel could lose up to $20 billion, according to the study. Under nonviolent resistance, however, Palestinians would call for international pressure, as they are doing now, including boycotts, divestment, and sanctions, which could cost Israel as much as $80 billion and the Palestinians $12 billion. In other words, the more that the conflict continues to fester, and the greater the efforts made to exacerbate that conflict, the more it costs both Israelis and Palestinians. While Israel loses more financially, it has much more to start with. and the BDS and sanctions efforts by the Palestinian leaders actually hurt their own people tremendously and ensure that they continue to remain in dire poverty. Now, economic realities do not always carry the day in the world, especially in the Middle East. Logic and careful objective analysis can be weak friends in a region rife with Islamist fundamentalism, ancient hatreds, and feuds that range from the tribal to racial to religious, and accepting Israel, a complete absence of democracy or a substantial middle class in any country. There is also tremendous corruption nearly everywhere in the Middle East, which warps decision-making at every level in every Arab country. But the dollars, or shekels, or pounds, or dinars all weigh down the scale in the same direction. Peace would be an enormous economic benefit to both Israelis and Palestinians. Even efforts towards peace, including unsuccessful ones, help both peoples' linked economies. And there is a precedent for peace efforts impacting the financial reality of Israel and the Palestinians positively. When the Oslo Accords were arranged in the 1990s, both Israel and the Palestinians took almost unimagined quantum leaps forward economically. I remember landing in Israel in 1996 after having been away for 4 years, during which the Oslo Accords had largely taken effect and the economics of Israel had dramatically changed. I was stunned at the difference. Israel, always a marginal country economically when it wasn't outright poor, suddenly looked prosperous. Everyone was on his or her cell phone all the time, and things clearly had changed dramatically for the better economically. Well, since the collapse of those accords in the late 1990s into a series of intifadas and Gaza wars, Israel has nonetheless retained and built hugely on those economic gains, while the Palestinians, who ultimately rejected and destroyed those agreements, have lost almost all the benefits they gained and continue to struggle financially in almost every way. I'm not sure that this Rand Corp study will make much of an impact on what often seems like a totally intractable situation. But if reason could prevail in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the economic facts that this report summarizes make a compelling case for resolving things expeditiously, or at least making efforts in that direction. Because the more intractable Israel appears to be towards the Palestinians, the more negative the financial impact there is for its otherwise thriving economy. And from the Palestinian perspective, the longer this goes on, the more things fester, the more the Palestinians suffer and the greater the support among them for the most radical and worst of the political options grows. Keep the mess going, and ISIS only looks better and better to the young people in the Palestinian territories, who have fewer and fewer economic opportunities. And that endangers both Fatah and Hamas. The Rand study's conclusion? In Israel and Palestine, peace is very good for business. There's always beautiful new music coming from Israel, no matter the economics or the politics of the situation. To play us in this morning, here's a bit of it, performed by Israeli singer Roni. It's a lovely, sad song called Mishehu, Someone, by Ehud Manor. It's about those we have lost. Someone worries for me up there, came and lit a few stars, and they fell one by one. We are turning in two different ways, day and night, their length, tired and hungry in the path of dust and time. We'll meet at the end of paths and questions. We'll meet at the end of many days, at the end of many nights. The spring passed, the summer went, the rain returned, but someone worries for me up there, comes and lights a few stars, and they fall one by one.
Mishehu doeg li sham lemala bavid li kama kochavim vehem noflim echad echad anu sovevim bishtei drachim shonim
That was Israeli singer Roni performing Ehud Manor's beautiful song, Mishehu, Someone. When we return in a few moments on Two Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Ian Sieb, a medical marijuana entrepreneur from Denver who is also highly active at developing young Jewish leadership for Colorado. Find out why he thinks that making marijuana available is part of his effort at Tikkun Olam, healing the world, when we come back in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Ian Sieb is the co-owner and manager of Denver Relief, one of Colorado's most successful medical marijuana operations. He's regarded as an expert in his field, but has also been heavily involved with the Jewish community and in leadership in the Jewish community. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in the medical marijuana field.
Sure. A very quick summary is that I had a terrible ski accident in the late 90s where I had partial paralysis in one of my arms and permanent nerve damage, which led to a very weak arm that in 2005 I was working out and suffered another accident on that arm that caused me to cut off the tip of my right pinky in a weightlifting accident. And as a result of that, I was given a bunch of pills and things to manage the pain, and nothing quite worked. And I had used cannabis recreationally for a number of years, but I realized that while I was consuming the cannabis, that the pain in the arm went away, whereas it didn't necessarily go away when I was taking pain pills. So several months after that happened, I ended up getting my medical cannabis license through a doctor that was here in Denver that was compassionate to making that recommendation, and he was really the first doctor that I became aware of that was willing to write these recommendations. It's not a prescription, it's simply a recommendation. And once I met this doctor, I realized that it was not too many people knew about how to go about doing that. So a small word of mouth business took off where I was helping people that I knew and some people I didn't know get their medical cannabis licenses. That's the way that I met my business partners. And so we had a couple of meetings. I had only known them for about a week at the time, and we decided to start what is now Denver's oldest medical cannabis dispensary.
You know, it's kind of fascinating. You've become the chairman of the National Cannabis Industry Association. Obviously, medical marijuana, while serving many people, is also controversial. Is there a lot of lobbying to do?
there is a significant amount of lobbying to do. I was at a mixer just last night for the National Cannabis Industry Association, which is really the nation's only trade association that deals directly with operators who are involved in the industry. And I was speaking about how I've been to D.C. now 4 times over the past couple of years lobbying for change, most specifically in regards to our banking laws, which it's very difficult to have a bank account if you're in the cannabis industry, both personal and for your business, as well as lobbying for changes to the tax laws. We are taxed under relatively unknown arcane tax law called 280E that was created in the 1980s as a result of a cocaine trafficker who was trying to make significant deductions for his helicopter and his boats and his machine guns. And so this law was enacted, and we're essentially paying a sin tax. And so we are on Capitol Hill on a regular basis trying to bring some equality about, because there's 23 states right now that have medical cannabis laws in some capacity, and more happening every day. And now there's recreational cannabis as well. And we just want to be treated like any other business. And so as a result of that, we are acting like any other business. And through our trade association, we're up on Capitol Hill, like many other industries do, speaking to our legislators and hoping to find some equality when it comes to laws.
We will continue talking with Ian Sieb when we come back on Too Jewish on the fascinating question of medical marijuana and his own Jewish involvement, and whether marijuana can be kosher, when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Kohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world is certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a recurring feature of Too Jewish, Deep Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Accept misfortune as blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or life without trouble. What would you talk about? And do not let children play contact sports like football. These only lead to injury and instill a violent, warlike nature. Have your child play peaceful games like sports doctor. Those were koans of Zen Judaism. We welcome our Mivi Na'an Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So it's summer now officially, and that's a time when people travel and lots of people go to Israel, a fantastic vacation location. Everybody knows you're supposed to go to Jerusalem and go to the Old City and go to the Kotel. Everybody knows you should go to Tel Aviv and at the very least go to the beach or the cafes. And but lots of people don't know all the other great things to do in Israel. So what are other places that they may not think about?
First of all, my hometown.
Beit Shean.
Beit Shean. It's a great view. It's a great place. I'm not sure in July, but you know, in
it's a
February,
little warm.
Yes. But if you're, by the way, during the summertime, there is the night and light, the light and sound show.
Yeah, sound and light show. Son et Lumière, the sound and light shows. They do it in the amphitheater in Beit Shean and on the Byzantine city.
Yes, and it's considered to be number three in the whole world.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, it's wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it's something to see like during the night, of course. And there is more than 40 springs all around, so it's really, although it's hot, you have, at least you have
it's lush
springs all, yeah,
lots of water,
not like Tucson.
No, afraid not.
And there is the Ethiopian village. There is a very nice project called Stories and Sirim Vesipurim, stories and
tales or something.
No,
or songs. Oh
no, stories and pot, like sirim.
So you visit
someone's house, mm-hmm, and you enjoy a beautiful dinner or lunch or breakfast, and you enjoy also the stories of wherever they came from, if it's from Morocco or Iran, or so it's a
Yemen
very
wherever,
yeah,
it was,
so
sure.
It's a very unique lunch, not just to go to a restaurant. There are also a lot of boutique winery all over. There is one in Beit Shean, but if you go to Golan Heights, there is plenty of great places.
Great wine tasting all over the Golan and in the Galil too, in the Galilee and even other valleys. Ella Valley has some fantastic wineries.
Nachon. And I know one particular place called Bel Ofri, which is a boutique winery. It's a restaurant and a gallery. And you can spend like the whole day with workshops and stuff. So there is a lot of things to see.
Lots of wonderful things. Also, now the latest thing that they've done quite a bit now is wineries with chocolate making places next to them. Because I've been to one last year around this time.
And so where is it?
It's in the Galil, in the Galilee. And can I remember where? No, but...
So we owe our listener that next time we need to mention this.
Okay,
name.
Well, next time we'll talk about wine and chocolate in the Galilee. It's a great place, always good to go to Israel, but particularly popular in the summer. Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk
to you soon. Bye.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We were talking last week about immigrants to Israel, non-Jewish immigrants to Israel. There have been a flood. Oh, I don't know if a flood is quite the right description, but there have been a lot of immigrants from all of the troubles in East Africa and Somalia, Sudan, and other parts to Israel. And Israel's been in a funny position of not really knowing what to do about it. Let's discuss this a little bit.
Sure. You use the word immigrants, and in fact, there's a distinction which is loud and clear in Israel between immigrants who are Jewish and have a right under the law of return to achieve Israeli citizenship and certain privileges of settlement and absorption and being taught Hebrew and whatever, and refugees who often arrive on foot from places like Sudan or Eritrea or whatever. They literally walk to Israel doing this dangerous trek across the desert that a lot of Latin Americans do to get here. It's parallel in many ways, although it's a lot further to go from Eritrea to Israel than it is to go from much of Mexico to Arizona.
To Tucson, for example.
Right. But these people make no claim to be Jewish, have no rights under Israeli law, have no hopes of becoming citizens. So there's a big debate in Israel right now. It's a hotly contentious item, much the same way that so-called illegals are here. I say so-called because undocumented aliens who don't comply with our law are termed illegals by some people. I personally don't like that. I don't think you can be an illegal human being. I think you can be in a place without complying with the legal requirements for being there, but that doesn't make you an illegal. It just makes your presence in that country sort of extra legal. It may be a distinction without a difference, but in any case, there are large numbers of these people, some of whom are highly qualified, but who risk either religious or racial persecutions in their home countries, or just risk the perils of civil war and a complete lack of order and all the dangers of a failed state. So they arrive in Israel, and they are basically arrested and put in a detention center in Holot, which, while I was in Israel, was a site of pilgrimage for a whole group of Reform rabbis.
Indeed.
To call attention to this situation. Because, you know, the Bible commands us to be kind to the stranger because we were strangers in the land of Egypt, and we once lived in a land not our own where we were oppressed and blah, blah, blah. So the debate in Israel in many ways mirrors the debate here. There are people at every point of the political spectrum who want these refugees to be treated kindly and humanely, find employment for them, whatever, stop paying to bring in Filipinos and Thais to do health care, and hire these people who are often trained doctors and nurses instead of imprisoning them in the desert in a really dreadful place called Holot. So this issue is becoming sort of a hot political football in Israel today, and I don't know where it's going to go. But it's not going to disappear anytime soon.
No, clearly not. Ger hayiti beretz nochriya, it says in the Torah, you know, I was a stranger in a land of strangers. So how can we treat people poorly? But it is indeed also a logistical challenge, and Israel, I think, is beginning to face up to what it needs to do. We will certainly see. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Frida Cohen went down for breakfast in her Miami Beach hotel. She saw another lady and went over to talk with her. "Hello, my dear, you're not from around here, are you?" "No," replied the other woman, "I'm from Mars." Frida said, "Really? Do all Martian women have blue skin like yours?" "Oh, yes," she said. "And do all Martian women have 8 fingers on each hand like you?" "Oh, yes," the Martian woman said. "And do all Martian women have an eye on their nose like you?" "Yes." "And do all Martian women have so many diamonds?" Frida asked. "No," the woman replied, "not the goyim." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. This week we read the Torah portion of Balak in the book of Numbers, which includes some of the best words an outsider ever delivered about our people. In this portion, one of just two in the whole Torah named after a non-Jew, 40 years of wandering have passed. The Israelites have finally arrived at the borders of the land of Canaan. They are about to move in, and they seem unstoppable to their opponents. Balak, the king of Moab, comes up with a novel plan. He will hire Balaam, a pagan sorcerer, to curse the Israelites, which will destroy their chances of defeating his own army and entering the land. Only the scheme doesn't work. Balaam may be a polytheistic prophet, but he is also an honest man who conveys only what God permits him to say. After consulting the Almighty, Balaam agrees to do the deed, but only if God allows him to do so and to say only the words God gives him. And so we are given the intriguing spectacle of Balaam the sorcerer three times trying to curse the people of Israel, only to find that the words that come out of his mouth are not curses, but blessings. The last of these orations is a text that has become a prayer we use whenever we enter a synagogue. Matovu ohalecha Yaakov, how good are your tents, Jacob, your homes, Israel. Somehow, the best laid plans of Israel's enemies go awry, transformed by the hand of God. Without being too deterministic, we know that in recent decades, many nations and organizations have planned the destruction of our people and of our country, of Israel. Although their efforts have injured us, we ultimately have triumphed. Perhaps more importantly, the personal message of this portion of Balak is a subtle one. Usually the way it works in life is that we intend to bring blessing, but bring tsoras, trouble, instead. But when we rely on God's help and inspiration, we find that even our less than nobly motivated actions can bring blessing in place of curse. It is all a matter of remembering the true source for inspiration and creativity, and therefore of blessing, which is God. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Ian Sieb, will explain how the field of medical marijuana is changing and what makes it, in some ways, a Jewish pursuit. He'll also explain how he's been reaching out to younger unaffiliated Jews to bring them into the Jewish community in Colorado and how that might apply in other parts of America. Find out when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
The noted biologist Paul Ehrlich of Stanford University, speaking for a group of scientists, has warned that due to global warming and the ongoing pollution of the earth, various animals are disappearing 100 times faster than ever before in the history of our planet. Unless things change, he said, we are, as humans, are contributing to our own self-destruction as well. Although admittedly not personally religious, when asked, Ehrlich said that the most disappointing moment in what has become a distinguished career was being rejected for an academic appointment years ago at Northwestern University because he was Jewish, something he has never forgotten. Israeli authorities continue to investigate the damage done by Jewish vandals to the historic Church of the Multiplication in northern Israel. The church, built in the 5th century, was severely gutted by fire. According to Christian tradition, it was there that Jesus miraculously fed 5,000 people with 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. Since the fire, thousands of pilgrims have gathered at the church in support of interreligious harmony in Israel. The search continues for the arsonists, who have yet to be apprehended. The former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, has provoked much controversy in reactions to his new book, Ally, My Journey Across the American-Israeli Divide, as well as to articles in the Wall Street Journal and Foreign Affairs magazine, in which he blames the current tense relationship between the two countries primarily on President Obama. Among other charges, although admitting that he is playing armchair psychoanalyst, Oren claims that in his view, the president has often taken a pro-Muslim position in his policies because he was abandoned as a child by 2 Muslim fathers. Critics of both the book and the articles include the current American ambassador to Israel, Daniel Shapiro, who says that Oren has created imaginary events that never happened and of being only interested in selling books. A second critic, Abraham Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League, accuses Oren of engaging in false conspiracy theories and amateur psychoanalysis. In Paris, the Louvre, the great French museum of art, has denied that it intentionally discriminated against a group of Israeli students wanting to visit the museum who were told that there was no room for them on the dates requested by the group's leader, a professor at Tel Aviv University. However, according to the professor, after having been turned down on 3 separate occasions, he called the Louvre using a false name, pretending to represent academic institutions in Dubai and Italy, and was told that there was room for the visit on the very same dates which the museum had previously said were filled. French officials admit that the reservation department of the Louvre had made a mistake, and that as a result, disciplinary measures have been taken. The museum has announced that it would be delighted to welcome the Tel Aviv students at any time during the month of August. And that's the 2 Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to 2 Jewish our guest this morning, Ian Sieb. He is one of the most prominent medical marijuana practitioners in the country, the co-owner and manager of Denver Relief, Colorado's oldest medical cannabis operation. He's also president of the National Cannabis Industry Association, very active in the Jewish community, a Denver native, a third-generation Denver native. He has been actively involved with Jewish Colorado, serves on the board of directors of the ADL and the Rocky Mountain Jewish Historical Society, been very active in the Wexner Heritage Program, in which he's a participant. Ian, so not the most important question, maybe, but so is marijuana kosher?
I would say that marijuana is a plant. It comes from the ground, and there's nothing that would make it not kosher.
Glad we could clear that up. I don't know if there's hechshers on packs of, I don't actually know how you sell medical marijuana, to be totally honest. The stereotype is that people are getting medical marijuana for recreational purposes, there are many different uses for medical marijuana, including I happen to know that many kids are trying to use it for who are cancer victims. Can you talk about some of the applications that you know of?
Sure. I think that there's a wide variety of debilitating conditions, and some that are not necessarily as debilitating as others, where one may may find relief from cannabis. When you speak of children, cancer is one of the leading conditions, but we're also finding that it helps with epilepsy, preventing seizures. It's been shown to provide relief for those who suffer from flare-ups as a result of Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndromes. Me personally, I suffer from persistent muscle spasms in my arm. As I was telling you, I had a terrible accident years ago, and I still suffer these muscle spasms from time to time, and I find that cannabis helps mitigate those spasms, which are oftentimes very painful. And quite honestly, you know, one of the leading causes for people to use cannabis in the United States is chronic pain. And, you know, I think that that's all relative in terms of what one person deems pain is on a scale of 1 to 10 versus another person. But if somebody can find relief and a little bit more comfort as a result of using medical cannabis, whether it's a physical debilitating condition or even suffering from something as simple as anxiety, I'm in favor of it.
You have become very involved with the Jewish community in Denver. I mean, you grew up there. Tell us a little bit about how that involvement has sort of evolved and what you think you guys have brought to young Jewish involvement.
Sure. As you said, I am a third generation Denver native. My parents, or my mom, was born here, and both of her parents were born here. And so, you know, growing up, I went to Hebrew school. I was bar mitzvahed. I went through all of the normal steps that a young Jewish boy in Denver would go through. I went to Israel when I was 17 years old for the first time, fell in love with it right away, went back several times, and really, I think the turning point for me to really become very involved in the community from more than just participating in events and activities was going back in the summer of 2004 as an Madrid for the trip that I went on as a student in 1993. And so it was a one-week trip to Poland, 5 weeks in Israel. And when the kids went home, I stayed there, and I moved to Kibbutz Yom Fata, just north of Eilat, where I participated in an Ulpan program for 5 months and stayed an additional month and a half beyond that, where I was working on the land west of the Jordanian border, 20 miles or so north of the Egyptian border. And I came back kind of a changed person. I realized that Israel had a profound effect on my life, and I felt compelled to give back in some way. Jewish Colorado, which used to be called the Allied Jewish Federation of Colorado, helped me find. I was working with the Shaliach there, and he helped me find the appropriate kibbutz. And so when I came back, I jumped right in doing some things with what is now Jewish Colorado. Along with two of my really good friends, a couple years later, formed an organization called E3 Events. It was myself, Ezra Schenken, who's the current CEO of the Federation Vancouver, and Eric Elkins, a prominent social media expert, started an organization that we recognize that there's a lot of people that are culturally associated with Judaism but really didn't participate and were somewhat non-affiliated. And so our goal was to reach out to them in a very non-threatening manner. And so we created this cultural series called the High Life Series, where we produced a number of different events, film series and author series. We took over the party on December 24th here in Denver that all the young Jews go to. Did this whole series where we reached out to the unaffiliated, and our mission was very simple, and it was bridging the gap between traditional Jewish values and pop culture with cocktails. And we've since put on over a dozen events over the past several years, and have reached out to thousands of young Jews here in Denver in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and it's been a great ride along the way. And from there, I was able to get involved with other wonderful organizations, as you mentioned, the Anti-Defamation League, the Rocky Mountain Jewish Historical Society, and continue to this day to be an active member of the community. And most recently, as you mentioned, I'm almost finished with my first year of going through the Wexner Heritage Program. I'm about to embark on a trip to Israel here in just under a month.
That's great. Wonderful involvement and important stuff, not necessarily related to the cannabis industry. I want to come back to that for a moment. There's a move to legalize marijuana What would that do to your business? How do you anticipate? Do you think that will happen?
Well, in Colorado, it is legal for all adults over the age of 21 to possess, to grow, and to consume cannabis. And so my, what was originally nothing but a medical cannabis facility for almost a year, is also a recreational cannabis facility. And so as long as you're 21 and you have a valid government-issued photo ID, you can come from anywhere in the world to my shop, Denver Relief, which is located right in the very heart of Denver at 1 Broadway, and purchase cannabis and use it. And so I feel strongly that prohibition doesn't work. You know, Abraham Lincoln even said it way back when, that prohibition doesn't work. We've seen it fail with alcohol, and we're seeing the war on drugs failing now here in America and around the world. And it started here in Denver, but it's quickly progressed. We're seeing countries like Spain and Portugal, Mexico is considering it, Jamaica has changed their laws. And I think this is, I've been saying this for the past several months, but we are now seeing the beginning of the end of prohibition in regards to cannabis around the world.
There are, of course, federal laws that contradict the state laws in this area. Has that proven to be a challenge for you beyond the banking issues you brought up earlier?
You know, in the very beginning, it's a great question, Rabbi. In the very beginning of our business, it was something that kept me up at night, and it was troublesome to think that I was breaking federal law. But there have been a number of communications that have come out from the Department of Justice. Specifically, there was one that came out just this past year where Eric Holder laid out 8 very specific points and said that so long as you are in, a couple years earlier, a memo by U.S. Attorney Cole said those in unambiguous compliance with state law will not be a target of federal prosecution. And since then, the message has evolved a little bit, and there's very specific guidelines that say so long as there's no weapons involved, there's no cartels involved, you're not crossing over state lines, you're not giving to minors, we are not going to target you. And because we have a robust regulatory system here in Colorado that has worked, The feds are pretty much non-existent. Now, we have seen problems for people who are operating under the guise of legal businesses, very few of them, and those operators were in fact raided and shut down, and they're going through lawsuits right now. But by and large, we have been able to operate without complications from the federal government.
How has the Jewish community in general reacted towards your prominence in the Jewish community in Denver? So I know that's kind of a complicated question. I'm sure there are people who don't think it's a good idea for marijuana to be legalized, even within the Jewish community.
I think that there are people in and out of the Jewish community that feel both positive and negative, have positive and negative opinions in terms of cannabis use. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago that what I do in the Jewish community is kind of different from what I do in the cannabis community, but I would say that I'm involved in medical cannabis because I am Jewish and because I have a desire to help people and to save one life is to save the entire world. And I hearken this to Tikkun Olam and to healing the world. And if I'm able to make one person have a better life as a result of their using cannabis, I feel that I have done something that is inherently Jewish. And I don't think that somebody who is against cannabis really can debate that issue. And who are they to say that if I'm making somebody's life better as a result of them using cannabis, there's really no argument there.
So I'm going to ask a really ignorant question because my knowledge of cannabis is, you know, restricted to college. Do people still smoke? Are there other delivery systems? How is the THA delivered, or is it THA that's the crucial element?
So there, again, another great question. And 5 years ago, the answer would have been, you know, practically everybody smokes it. But we are finding more and more people finding alternative delivery methods. Flowers, as we call them, or the buds that are the smokable piece of cannabis, only accounts for about 50% of the revenue that we now bring into the facility because there are such a wide variety of other delivery systems. Most people are familiar with the stereotypical pot brownie. So we have edibles, a wide range of edibles ranging from hard candies, lollipops, chocolates, baked goods, granola, butter, honey, you name it, it can be medicated. We also have other delivery systems like vaporizers, where you see a lot of people smoking e-cigarettes these days, and it's very similar to something like that, where we extract the material through through an extraction process, be it ice water or CO2 or even a flammable solvent like butane, to extract those essential oils and put it into an oil form that's then put into these vaporizers. We have a wide variety of tinctures under the tongue, so lingual delivery, things like breath strips that people stick under their tongue. And we have a wide variety of topicals as well, balms, salves. I'm working currently with a company that's developing a transdermal delivery system, transdermal patches, much like the nicotine patch. And for the sickest of the sick, you know, you can step it up all the way to suppositories for people who can't eat, can't smoke, really have no other way to ingest a medicine. So there's a very wide variety of delivery systems. And because this industry is quickly becoming one of the largest growing industries, if not the largest in the United States, the evolution and the technologies are changing every day, not unlike the computer industry and Moore's Law.
Fascinating. With somewhat different ethos, I would think, than the computer industry.
Yeah, a little bit.
I want to thank Ian Seib for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Well, they can check out any one of a number of websites. Denver Relief is our retail facility. We run a nationwide consulting company called Denver Relief Consulting. So denverrelief.com, denverreliefconsulting.com. If you're interested in the community service aspect of our business, you can go to facebook.com/Denver Relief Green Team. And that's a community service organization that we created to break the barrier of the stereotypical stoner and show that members of the cannabis community can give back just like anybody else.
Thanks again, Ian, for a great visit, and good luck, continued success.
Thank you so much for having me, Rabbi. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Colonel John Gold, a 30-year veteran of U.S. military intelligence, discussing ISIS, ISIL, and Islamic extremism and terrorism today. Our playout this morning comes from our house rock band, Avanim, and its anthem, drawn from the Talmud, Great Peace of Those Who Love Your Torah and Study It, Shalom Rav, Leohavei Toratecha. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shalom, shalom.